Hello, geeks, and welcome to part one of our two-part episode on Blockbuster Video and rental stores in general. Several of our panelists actually worked at Blockbuster back in the day, and it definitely started running a lot longer than we planned on it running for the episode. Now, we wanted to be able to talk about the experience we all had growing up and watching movies, as well as the experience of working at some of these stores and the backstory there. And so the episode itself turned out to be close to 2 hours, and instead of cutting it down significantly to try to get it to a normal episode length, we decided to go ahead and release it as a two-part episode. So you'll get about an hour on this first part, and then it'll sound like we're going to break. That will actually be the end of the episode. And then we'll pick up the second half, which would be the, of the show, as the second part next week for part two. So I hope you're ready to hear a lot of very interesting stories about our times growing up renting movies and also working at these video stores as adults, and all of our experiences. Hopefully you can share some experiences yourself via our social media. All those links are available at gypodcast.com. We'd love to hear your stories from your days working at or visiting rental stores in the days of old. Enjoy the episode.
The views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I actually rewatched it right before the first season of Cobra Kai dropped on YouTube Red or whatever a couple years ago. And I didn't realize one of the first screen appearances of Walton Goggins as a thug.
Oh,
he's in that movie. I'm like, holy shit.
I love going back to old movies for that reason, is to find like actors that are really important actors now that had small parts. Like, you've got Sam Rockwell's in the original Ninja Turtles movie.
Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah,
he's
dude.
Like the "you guys like cigarettes" that that dude from Ninja Turtles, that is Sam Rockwell.
Nice.
And then you've got Jack Black was the bad guy in The NeverEnding Story 3.
Oh my god.
He was the bully.
Yeah. Watch that. I have never watched
part. Don't. Two. It's not worth it. Like, just find a YouTube clip of him as the bully. That's the only like thing that's worth looking at all, but
Jesus. Oh, Mars Attacks, where Jack Black shows up in there and you're like, "Wait,
oh,
what?"
Yeah.
Like he's a private or something in Mars Attacks.
It was totally like going back and watching that. I was like, "Wait a minute. Is that son of a god?"
What was it? The first time I saw Jack Black, he got his arm blown off by Bruce Willis in The Jackal.
Oh my god, The Jackal. The Jackal is so underappreciated.
Yes.
But it is fun to kind of revisit some of these older films of these actors. And a lot of the way that I kind of discovered that was just in my childhood going through the rental stores, picking up all the old movie section stuff and just anything that had a cool cover. Like, it didn't matter if I... because all you had was like the paragraph on the back of the box to inform you on whether or not it was good. You couldn't pull up your phone and look at a trailer.
Google the trailer. Couldn't do it.
No, exactly. Especially coming from, you know, like a horror realm. Like, dude, the horror movies had some of the occasionally greatest covers ever. They're the ones that would have shit inside, like oozing around. You don't get that with any DVD. The VHS would have like The Blob. I think there was a Blob copy that was released at one point that had it. Like, I think The Stuff did. There's one that had a bunch of blood in it.
There's actually, I think, a documentary about the lost art of the VHS cover. A lot of times there was concept art made before the movie was actually made.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of times the cover had nothing to do with it, but that was the marketing. It sold. Like, the poster happened before the movie sometimes.
In some cases, the poster even sold the movie, or like, and they would get known artists to do that. I think mm-hmm. they touched on that in Search of Darkness. They were talking about how important, especially like late 80s, early 90s video cover art was in, marketing these movies.
Well, and that was such an informative time for me, especially with genre film. Was the late 80s, early 90s. That's when I was getting to an age where I was able to pick out those movies myself on the Friday night when everybody rushed to the video store at the same exact time to try to get there for the new releases. And then you didn't get there in time and you had to go into the old movie section and find stuff. And then the amazing covers of like Deathstalker, Defcon 4, The Hills Have Eyes, like these covers that I was not allowed to watch those movies at that point, and I was just like listlessly like holding my hand out like one day I'm going to watch Frankenhooker because it had the VHS cover that if you push the boob it said want a date, and I was like I need to see this movie.
But yeah,
also I have to ask, who else, once they could go ahead and like rent their own movies, went off of like if it was rated R, what it was rated R for?
Oh, sure.
Like if it said violence and gore, or like Alien versus Predator had the word slime and rated PG-13. Rated PG-13 for slime. And I mean, clearly, if it said nudity, you're in.
Oh, yeah, like 100%. That. And we're going to get into, on this episode, we're going to be talking about the video rental store. Primarily, we're going to be talking about Blockbuster because three of the four panelists on here actually worked at Blockbuster at some point in their lives, one of which actually trained me to be a manager for Blockbuster. So we're going to be digging into that and just the nature of the video rental store and how much consumption of media has changed over the years. I would say, before we get even started, if you haven't had the chance to listen to the interviews with Tom Seymour of VHS Massacre from previous episodes, go ahead and look that up on our previous stuff. The VHS Massacre documentary is all about the death of physical media, and it's really insightful to VHS Massacre 2 is hitting the circuit right now. I think it's available on Troma Now as well, and so it's definitely a great resource to really talk about the death of physical media. We're going to be more focusing on the feeling of going to the rental store and actually working there as well on this episode, our Blockbuster episode that we're doing on this one. So thank you to my panelists for joining me on this one, and welcome.
Buildings at work and shall be again. A changing of the guard, the dead's marching in. You think you can hold out, but you know you're wrong, so you better join us now. You better do it fast or you will be. Necronomicon gives us power to rise from the dead. You play the tape, our play begins to spread. You can fight all you want, but futile to resist. We're here to take the world and rule with an iron fist. So join us or die. Join us or die.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Hey, man, all I know is that you had to sell that motherfucking movie pass, bitch.
Oh, that fucking movie pass, Jesus.
I drank half these memories away.
Right?
Yeah, right?
I'm interested to see how much we remember from, like, over a decade ago at this point of working at a Blockbuster Video. It seems like it's a different lifetime that Blockbuster Video was a thing that we did. A company that required you to talk to people about the newest Dario Argento movie while wearing fucking khakis and a polo shirt. That they,
well,
for some reason, they were anti-jeans for the most part.
Well, I mean, he wore button-up and dress slacks, so I think you weren't that far off.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, I'll take that over my first video store employment situation when I worked when I was like 15, 16. For Hollywood Video briefly, and I had to wear a tuxedo shirt with a red cummerbund and a red tie.
No.
Fuck that.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? That's terrible. So the khakis, they sucked, but it wasn't that bad.
I had one pair of khakis. I had one single pair of khakis that I wore every single day to work.
And it showed.
Also, all of those videos going through so many hands. How black were the front of your khakis from like wiping your hands on them? Because mine were filthy.
Fortunately,
they were permanently like stained gray.
I had a lot of pen marks on my khakis that I just like gave up on worrying about, like just marks from pens. Because just
it was
a weirdly dirty job. Like you didn't think about it at the time, but it did getting like adhesive on your fingers. Your fingers like cracking from the amount of like. Goo off that you're using and like peeling shit off and like your finger like your it was the fucking worst.
I clearly remember watching people clean the cases
before
they got put back in the video store. So how are your hands still black from touching all that stuff.
Well, ooh. Sometimes when your hands are wet and then it touches a thing that is gross, the gross thing ends up just on your hands. So, like, even if you're cleaning it on a regular basis, it's also reapplying, like, a lacquer of filth on your hands at all times.
When you're checking in, like, 600 return videos, return freaking DVDs that have been in every other kind of house, including smokers' houses and people with, like, 35 cats, shit's nasty sometimes, bro.
I literally opened up a DVD case and a cockroach ran out. I am not kidding you.
That's fucking disgusting.
That was at the Forest Hill location. Literally opened it up, and that's when they had the yellow slide locks where there was an open hole at the bottom of the DVD case. And I guess that's how the cockroach got in and was like, this is comfy, and waited until it's opened dark. Up the fucking DVD case and the cockroach went and ran. So
then it went and had babies in the store.
Yep, probably. And just met up with the other cockroaches in that store and went, sup, I'm visiting. But before we continue on with Blockbuster stories, let's talk about our panel here, the people on that are going to be talking about their experience working at Blockbuster, or just literally everybody's, you know, Americana experience of visiting the rental store growing up. First off, of course, the host of Beautiful Disasters that talks about schlock and a lot of those movies that you talk about, probably you were informed by the old section in Blockbuster back in the day. We've got Herr Grutz is here.
Good to be here. Yeah, I got to say, the experience of working for Blockbuster for a few years swelled my collection, especially when they had those like 5 for $20 deals.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude.
Well, that's actually how we met, is that I was working at the Forest Hill store and you were on, I think, the loss prevention team at that point.
I used to be one of the managers of that store. I guess I was already on the inventory team, the loss prevention team.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
But either way, yeah.
So I met you through Blockbuster. The next person on the panel actually was my trainer at the training store when I first started at Blockbuster, which is so funny to me that you started doing the rigmarole of the training thing, and then we started talking about music, and you're like, oh, you're fine. This is how you actually do it. And just gave me the, like, not the rule book version, the Blockbuster version, but, like, how it actually works. We've got Will McCobb here.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Yeah, I definitely was. Grutz, didn't I train you as well?
We worked together at the Mechanicsville store.
Ooh,
was that what? Okay, so we worked together. I couldn't remember if you had been one of the guys who come through the training store, or if we'd worked together. Hell, all I remember is we got to talking about scotch, and then we were like, "Well, yeah, fuck, no. We're gonna be friends."
Yeah, right? we bonded pretty quick. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, it was. I was kind of racking my brain about it because I remember I trained so many people because I was at the training store as the assistant manager.
That was at VCC.
And of course, the manager was never there, so I was just running this fucking store.
You were training me around the time that they were trying to sell DirecTV subscriptions through the store. That was the big push at that point.
Yeah, I sold 3 of those. Yeah,
nobody actually gave a shit. Like, even the managers gave up after a while. It was nonsense. But speaking of nonsense, somebody that calls me out on my nonsense every single fucking episode of this podcast, my right-hand man and co-runs the network with me, Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everybody? How you doing?
You I think, are the only person that hasn't worked at Blockbuster on this panel, but definitely frequented rental stores growing up.
Yeah, I frequented rental stores. I like never rented from Blockbuster. You guys are over fucking priced for no reason.
You're correct.
Fuck you, man.
I'm just saying, you worked for like the devil of video rental places.
You're not wrong at all.
I know. I'm not saying it to be like negative. I'm just stating facts. That's all I'm saying. Like, Blockbuster was like the antichrist of video rental for me.
I was looking for like the best pay, and Hollywood Video was like, you're getting minimum wage, bro. Like, that's it. And Blockbuster is like, you're getting a dollar above minimum wage. And we're like, wee. That was.
See, now I did use Hollywood Video. That was the last thing I rented at in Richmond. Well, besides Video Fan.
There's Movie Gallery and Hollywood Video.
Movie Gallery closed down before Hollywood Video.
True, yeah. I ended up, I still have a copy of The Minus Man from Movie Gallery because I rented it. It was over near the Lombardi Kroger in Richmond. Mm-hmm. They had a movie gallery there. And then I rented the movie, and in the time that I rented it from when I went to return it, they went out of business. And I went, well, I guess this is just mine now. So,
yeah, I mean, it's out. I mean, what are they going to write it off on their taxes?
Right?
I mean, they're out of business.
Do I have to call and have somebody like meet me in the parking lot, like a drug deal, to return The Minus Man starring Owen Wilson and Janine Garofalo? Yeah, like that's.
My movie gallery was right there off Staples Mill and Broad. It was like right there.
Okay.
Near, was it RPM, which is like a car mod store?
Yeah.
Hollywood Video was a Staples Mill in like Glenside.
Okay.
That was huge. Had a, literally an entire separate rental place for games. Not like a separate section. Like, they had a whole separate counter and room for game rental stuff. It was fucking gigantic.
Well, there was a big push. Like, right around the... When 360 and PlayStation 2, maybe? 3? Picked up where it was the HD gaming. Yeah. Is when, like...
PS3 and...
There was a whole change in the video game rental... thing. I mean, Blockbuster, I know, had been renting video games for the longest time. I rented Nintendo games at Blockbuster back in the day. I actually was in the top 10 for my Blockbuster store, the closest to my house, for in like 94. They had a video game championship thing for Blockbuster where you went in and competed. They had little kiosks where they had games that you could play in the store, and they had a competition. I played the Judge Dredd movie video game. I played a Ninja Turtles fighting game, and I believe NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
T-E.
for those in the know, it's T-E.
That's what I'm saying. You could break the glass. And the man who's very proud of his competition skills.
Yeah, that would top be 10 on at NES. One store. Yeah.
That would be like the Super NES Sega era of gaming.
That was Sega. I also... competed in Super Nintendo, where they had a speed run version of Donkey Kong Country, where fuck the bananas, get through the levels as quick as you can, and I think that's where I actually got the top 10 was Donkey Kong Country. So
there you go. That's
fucking bananas.
It's Mike Diamond Bigot, gentlemen.
That's right me. There.
That's him.
I'm bananas for Donkey Kong Country, and this episode as well. I remember renting a Virtua Boy from Blockbuster around the same time as well.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that is.
I don't even know what that is.
That was Nintendo, where it was a thing that you put on your head. It was like a VR helmet, and it was just all red lines, and it was supposed to be three-dimensional, quote-unquote.
Wait, so you rented this?
I rented the game system. It was just like this little personal game system. It wasn't something that went on the TV. It was like this unit that for $9...
I don't know, man. Something about renting something that you wear is just, ugh.
That's
just because it's modern times now.
Yeah,
back then you didn't think about how gross people were.
Yeah, this is the early 90s. Early 90s, like, I was a teen, I was preteen or teenager, so I was probably licking stuff on the ground at that age.
Let me sweat in this.
I was a gross preteen teenager, so fuck it. Like, germs were not my concern at that point. I was literally sweating out hormones and grease out of my body at that age. So
truth,
among other things,
But yeah, the Virtual Boy. I'm glad I rented it because I have friends that bought it and they were like, "This is garbage and gives me headaches." And they ended up buying like a $200 thingy that just ended up in the closet, not being used.
In the 90s.
The 90s.
$200 in the 90s.
In the 90s.
Damn.
That's a lot of money now. It's
like $600 bucks now. Yeah.
Jesus.
So I do want to kind of get into like your guys's like stories of growing up, going to Blockbuster and rental stores in general, about just like your experiences finding these movies, what movies like blew you away that you found randomly, or like weird, you know, relationships you had with like the cool employee at your store.
Well, I gotta say, I had a weird childhood because I moved around a lot overseas.
Sure.
And so I didn't really have the opportunity to do the rental store, you know, video store thing in my youth. We would, you know, by the time I was in middle school, when we were living in India, we would get like bootleg shit. Like, that's how I saw T2 for the first time.
Nice.
I saw T2 recorded by some dude on a camcorder, and sometimes like the whole screen would tilt a little bit because he wasn't keeping it straight. So it was like super fucking like bootleg bullshit. But I think that kind of transferred in when I came back to the States for my freshman year of high school. And like shortly thereafter, like a year and a half later, when I was like ready to like get my first job, that's where I gravitated. You know, I was like, well, I want to do something. I love these movies, you know, and if it wasn't for like relatives that were like sending us VHS tapes with movies and shit on them, you know, they kept us in it.
Was that like a hard transition, though, where you're watching Terminator 2, an actual version of it, and you're like, this is where the tilt. Oh, there's no tilt. There's no tilt. Like where you have it. Do you watch it now and you know the exact scene where there's the tilt because you watch it so the bootleg so many times?
I think our family, like, we compensated so much when we got back to the States because we immediately bought a Laserdisc player and just started buying Laserdiscs, like, because it was the best quality because we had been looking at bootleg shit and like, been overseas. So, like, suddenly, you know, you go from, like, having seen that version of T2 to, like, the CAV Laserdisc where it's like, holy shit, that's the best looking thing we've ever seen.
And that is the first time that Groot's ejaculated.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And dude. Then, fucking Laserdisc.
And then 3 years later, Laserdisc is obsolete.
And oh. And then like 25 years later, Groot buys a Laserdisc player for himself.
Yeah, for like the 30-year-old Laserdisc yeah, video.
Right. Well, to be fair,
somebody was like, "Oh, well, I need to get I have a Laserdisc of Slipstream, so I guess I have to buy a completely like illegitimate form of media now to play the Slipstream yeah. Laserdisc."
No, they just got smart. Well, and were like, "Hey, we can compact it. Now we got the DVD.
The DVD. Laserdisc.
It's true."
Yeah,
I remember. Yep. When there was a Blockbuster like a couple miles from my house growing up, and I was there all the time, like every weekend. It like the Americana of the late 80s into early 90s of Friday night, your parent comes home and like right away the kids are ready to go, like, okay, let's go. And you got to get there as quick as you can to get the new releases or whatever you're going to get for the weekend. And the kids are asking for all the candy that are at the counter. And the parents are like, you don't need Twizzlers. We have Twizzlers. We have candy at home. And the candy at home is like way shittier candy than the candy that you can get at Blockbuster, but also like not $8 for a pre-made bucket of popcorn. I remember realizing the difference between full frame and widescreen at Blockbuster because I looked at this movie called where there was a baby on the cover in a bubble called 2001 A Space Odyssey. And I was like, this is a really cool cover. And the back was entirely, it was the widescreen version. There were two copies. One was the widescreen and one was the full frame. And the widescreen copy, it wasn't even about the movie. It was about what widescreen was and how like that is a better format because it doesn't cut off the corners of it. That was on the back of the fucking movie. So I'm like reading intently about how widescreen is better. And then I remember being like, we have to watch widescreen now. And then the first widescreen movie we got, my mom just bitched the entire time about how do you get rid of the black bars? How do you get there's black bars on the top and bottom. How do you get rid of the black bars?
So you why is this frozen at all?
Am I good? No, you're good. You're good.
It like skipped a minute ago. Okay. So. So speaking of the Mechanicsville Blockbuster.
Oh,
so,
God.
this is like redneck heaven of the greater Richmond area. And remember that we were working at Blockbuster when like DVD and like pushing widescreen was the new thing.
The thing.
That was like the thing. It's in widescreen. Oh, big. So this... I remember this one dude wandering in, being like, "Hey, man, I like still chewing his chaw here and spitting in a cup in the Blockbuster, going, "Hey, man, hey, you got any movies without the black bars?" Like, are you talking? So I tried to explain to him the difference between widescreen and standard. And he goes, "No, man, no, we ran that other movie over there in the standard, and I saw the whole movie. They ain't cut it off with them black bars."
Oh my God.
I think every retail job gets you a better understanding of just how incredibly dumb people are. But I think there is a certain thing with any retail job that involves any level of technology where even in the rental store, I remember literally talking to somebody about how a DVD wouldn't play. And so they wanted their money back. So I put it in the player at Blockbuster and it played fine. And after 20 minutes of conversation about, well, didn't play in my player, and being like, well, did you like wipe it off? Did you make sure your player isn't dusty? All this stuff. Turns out they thought that the picture side of the disc was what you put on the bottom so that the DVD player knew what movie was playing. They were literally putting in the DVD upside down. Because in their mind, that's how the DVD player knew what movie it was.
I got a rant on this. The motherfuckers, it's a fucking video CD. Did you not have CDs for 10 years before you had a fucking DVD, you ignorant cocksuckers? What the fuck is wrong with you? God, you should not have fucking children.
The absolute level of absurdity of things that we dealt with on a regular basis working at a Blockbuster was like a comedy of errors every single shift that you worked. And I believe like the three of us on this panel that worked at Blockbuster got moved around a lot while working at Blockbuster. Like I worked at, I think, almost every single store in the greater Richmond area.
Yeah.
I only officially worked at three stores. However, I pulled a shift at, I think, every single store.
Same. Yeah, there were stores that I never officially worked at Carrytown, but when Denise was the manager of Carrytown, I got pulled in all the time to cover because that was my first boss when I worked at Gate and Crossing. So she was like, she knew that I was a good get. So.
And there you go, folks. Again, we're going to point out that I have never worked at a Blockbuster, and for good reason, because I don't handle stupid at all.
I would have been fired the first week. Yeah, you would not have lasted long at Blockbuster.
I do not handle stupid. Like, I just can't. I can't. Like, it just, I just switch.
Well, now, Lowdown, have you had any kind of, like, retail job before where you worked with the public?
Yes, my very first job was Subway. So, you know, you're, like, right in front of the customer as you're making their food.
I really wish that was an era where everybody had video on their phone just to see you, like, put together a Subway sandwich.
Oh, dude.
It would have been the greatest thing ever.
Those motherfuckers would come in, like, 20 minutes before closing, and we've already been cleaning up. And I get it. People do that. Everyone, I'm sure, that's on this panel has done that in some form or another, whether the last minute, we need to get food, last-ditch effort, and they fuck the person that's there.
Sure.
And you feel bad because you've been there. But, like, you want it, when you say, you know, jalapenos, and you're like, oh, yeah, I want that shit extra spicy. Oh, you're going to get extra spicy, motherfucker. It's going to be like a fucking mountain. Oh, there's going to be more jalapenos in the thickness of, if you did a half cut of that sandwich, than the meat. Fuck you in your face.
I'm just picturing, like, that you've gotten through the meat and the cheese, and you're waiting for the toppings of, like, the lettuce and the tomato, and they're, like, mulling it over, and, like, I don't know. And then they're, like, talking to somebody, and they're not paying attention. You're sitting there with the open sandwich being like, all right, do you want fucking tomatoes? You know what? You're getting tomatoes. And just like throwing tomatoes on. Like, what else do you want? Like, you know what? You're getting lettuce too. Anything else? Oh, you're not black answering olives. Yet? You're also getting black olives. You know what? Also, hot sauce. Fuck you. And just like hate fucking the sandwich.
That is exactly how I figured Lowdown's. Any kind of customer service situation Lowdown would be involved in would probably go.
Now, in fairness, I did have a lot of customer service when I was doing HVAC. Because it was just me, the service technician, dealing with the customer. They were angry because they were hot and or cold, sweaty and or freezing, yada, yada. But that I understood more because it was more of a comfort thing. Like it could be potentially unhealthy versus ignorant motherfuckers.
Purchasing potentially unhealthy subs instead.
That's the line. You see the line? Like there's understandable frustrations of people and empathizing with that versus people just being fucking dumb.
Yeah, fair enough.
There's my line.
Lowdown, I got to tell you, we need an episode about customer service in the food industry.
Oh my God.
Because I worked at Hardee's too. That was my second job.
That's a whole nother mess.
Oh, yeah. We could go there.
Collection of 30 panelists of people that are just close friends that we could have on for that episode.
And we can talk about how I went from having to deal with that at a young age to getting venting and going through a therapeutic purge when I was able to bounce. See how that works out.
Oh, dude. That would be a great episode, by the way.
That just equals out. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
something that was cathartic
just hold
for me
topic.
Is a few years after it came out is when I first saw Clerks for the first time. Mm-hmm. And one of the most cathartic things to think about when I was working at Blockbuster was scenes with Randall in the video rental store doing his thing, reading off the different pornos that he's ordering in front of like the mother and the child.
Yeah.
And and also just like telling people that they can't rent shit or like not opening the store on time and just being a complete fuck off. And I'm sitting there at a corporate entity, fuck our employees, they don't give a shit video rental store, just daydreaming about working for the same wage as I was making then in a company that just genuinely didn't care. Just did not care.
That was the big thing. It was sucked for you three was you were working for the corporate chain, whereas like a Randall and Dante both worked for a private owner. And honestly, most of the video rental stores I went to when I was, you know, in Jersey before I moved to Virginia were all private owners. Like my mom and I never really, I don't think we set foot in a chain. Like if it wasn't, the only chain we rented movies from was we had a ShopRite was the grocery store we went to. And they had a huge video rental section. So I remember I rented Man's Best Friend there. Remember that movie about the cyborg, that little genetic enhanced dog?
Yeah, cyborg dog. Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
But he like pissed acid.
It was Man's Best Friend. And wasn't there also K-9000? I think it was another cyber dog.
I remember that. There was another one, K-9000.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was that. But that wasn't really like a chain video store. That was just something that the chain grocery store did.
Sure.
Throughout their stores. Other than that, it was like locally owned. I think there was two primary ones we went to. Well, three. And they were all privately owned, independent video stores. And they had some of the greatest prices, greatest selection. Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
In a world ravaged by movie studios that keep rehashing the same things, only one podcaster has the guts to make it even worse. Join Mike the Hobbit as he traverses the internet to bring you some of the best and worst ideas for reboots, remakes, and reimaginings of some of your favorite and least favorite TV and film properties. Ideas like a John Waters He-Man movie, Fantastic Four the musical, and Aliens done entirely with marionettes. What podcast would bring this evil upon the world? This is Smack My Pitch Up. Available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Scotty Big Daddy Preston here, that's right, the Geek Father, asking you to join me here every other week with friends and family of the GUI Network as we go through all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent. So remember, join us or cry.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com. When I started at Blockbuster, I was trying to get out of food service because I was I tried to go the fine dining route, and I just hadn't. Well, also I was a fucking like early 20s person, and so I didn't have the work ethic to be able to actually get into fine dining. I was just line cooking like crazy and didn't actually give a fuck. I just knew that I liked cooking, and I decided I need to get out of line cooking. Let's get into retail. Like that's better. No, that's way fucking worse. And I got a job at Blockbuster because I had it in my head that like the greatest jobs ever was working at a record store or a movie store, because all you do all day is talk about movies. And I was stoked as fuck to just wander around, ask people what they wanted, be like, oh, if you like that movie, you're going to like the same director, this movie. And there were elements of that in the job, for sure. There were. But that was like 12% of the job was having those amazing moments of turning people on to certain directors or certain actors or even subgenres of film that they're like, this is a thing, and getting people into it. That was brilliant, but that was so minimal compared to all the other bullshit that was connected to the gig.
And
so I have to drop my experience like before I worked at Blockbuster, because I like a couple of you said, you know, small town overseas. Mike over here had like Blockbusters and Hollywood videos everywhere where he was. I grew up in Lynchburg, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
And
that,
like,
explains why you are the way you are now.
Yeah, so if you watched a movie, people would tell you that you're the devil.
Well,
because
hell,
movies are the devil.
Rent, though, so, I mean, who's the devil? The one watching it or the one that's supplying it?
Right. Mm. Mm. But you know what? Like, so we had, like, a Hollywood Video and a Blockbuster. It just mattered on, like, what part of town I was in, where I was going. Excuse me, I, like, choked on the air there.
Yeah, you're fine.
There.
Mm-hmm. It's good for what ails you.
Yep.
Yep, yep. Okay, beer helped. There we go. So, yeah, no. Like, if it was at my parents' place, it was Blockbuster. If it was, you know, at my girlfriend's place, it was Hollywood Video, because those were the closest ones. And I will tell you what, and you mentioned it early on, like, the cool person.
Yeah.
In Lynchburg, there was never a cool person that stayed around. Like, you meet one and you'd like, oh, this dude knows something about horror movies. And, you know, this guy recommended Evil Dead. And you go back 2 weeks later, that dude is gone.
Yep.
So
well, I lucked out that when I got into,
so
like,
I never had that.
When I got into high school years, you know, I ended up hanging out with all the fucking weirdo kids. It was the punk rock kids or the AV club kids or the drama clique kids or just all the weirdos that weren't like the cool jockey types. And we would hang out outside of school and whatever video rental store was near whoever's place we were hanging out at, we'd end up renting movies that we weren't supposed to be watching at our age, you know, very, you know, auteur films. That's where I discovered Cronenberg for the first time and watched like Crash and Shivers and Rabid and like all of his early work stuff. And that's where I discovered, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space and like all these super incredibly schlocky bad movies, just hanging out with friends, watching the dumbest shit ever and going over the moon about it. And I love that trajectory with rental stores, of that there's the times that you watch it with your family and you're watching the newest Disney movie or the newest, you know, Blockbuster film that comes out, the, you know, the new family film or like, you know, big Jurassic Park shit like that, which is great. But then you have the time with your friends, where there was one summer Blockbuster had two old movies for 50 cents a piece. If you bought two, it was a buck, or rented two. So the entire summer, my friend James and I rented every day at least four movies and took them down every single day. So four movies a day for the entire summer. That was an incredibly informative summer for me.
Damn.
I was going to say, I guess I'm fortunate because so when I was still, I believe, single digits, and I was in Northfield, New Jersey, I do remember watching horror movies like Tales from the Dark Side movie and,
yeah,
you know, all the slasher sequels that were available at the time. So at that point, we're talking like 93, 94. So we're, you know, with certain ones were at part five, certain ones were at part seven, you know, yada, yada, whatever. But I do distinctly remember where I was living before I moved to Virginia. We had a video store we could walk to. It was called 8 Days a Week. I saw some of the most formative movies there. Like, I remember I saw Army of Darkness first, and then actually went back and watched Evil Dead, and then Evil Dead 2. That was the order in which I watched them. Because we watched Army of Darkness, and the guy's like, oh, you need to check out Raimi. Like, he knew the director. He's like, oh, you got to check out this other stuff. And he took me to Evil Dead. So that was really cool. But then, I mean, like, Maniac Cop and just all these,
yeah,
like, just all these oddball, I mean, Pumpkinhead. That freaked me the fuck out the first time I watched that. Not like,
fuck yeah,
not like scare me for numbers, but just freaked me the fuck out. That movie's like actually fucking terrifying if people like absorb what they're watching. But anyway, like, I had to watch it with my mom though. I didn't have to watch it with my friends. Like, but then again, I was also like 10, 11, 12. So it wasn't like late teens. I was watching that shit, you know, preteen.
Well, with a lot of the informative, stuff that I watched, growing up, there was some of it, there was like USA Up All Night, and there was like a channel 69 in San Diego that I got to see, like Chud and Slugs and like all these bad movies. But then also it was the era, and this I think is something is a little bit missing from the sight unseen nature of where today with the internet, you can watch the trailers, you can read up on IMDb, get like all the information. With movies and music, you'd read the liner notes, you'd memorize the actors, the directors, like everybody involved with the movie, and then you would go and find their other shit. And sight unseen, you'd rent it or buy it just because you know that you like this one thing, so you have to watch this other stuff. And that's how I ended up watching the most abysmal and also amazing movies, is discovering one movie and then realizing that that actor's in another thing or that director did another thing. Like, that was my whole Cronenberg run, was watching, I don't even remember what Cronenberg movie I saw first, and then just going down the road. But the big difference between the independent stores and like Blockbuster is that independent stores, if you were going down a series like Halloween or A Nightmare on Elm Street, if somebody didn't return one of those, if they only had one copy, they'd replace it. A fucking Blockbuster, if Nightmare on Elm Street 6 doesn't get returned and they look at the rental history on it and it hasn't been rented a lot, they just don't replace it. So you'd be like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and then no 6. And you go, can I get that? And they're like, well, let me see what other store has it, because we're never getting it again. That's just a black hole. Horrible. It's a black hole.
It was the garbage of the corporate,
right. Yeah,
the corporate black right. Movie rental industry.
Yeah, the you guys are all talking about like kind of growing up with the video stores. So like, I kind of had this situation where music, comic books, movies, everything kind of became accessible when I came back to the States, you know, starting high school. So I just dove in, and you know, any of the fucking local video stores. Deep.
Yeah.
I went a little bananas with it. But, you know, back then, you know, I was, as soon as I was back in town, I was like, I'm going to subscribe to Thrasher magazine and like all these things. You get like movie and music reviews out of that, and like anything that you could get your hands on, because there was no like super accessible internet in Rumorg,
Fangoria,
I have to. You went a little deep? No, you are a little deep.
Yeah,
you still are. Like, it continued. It never went away.
Yeah, bro. our regular panelist that refuses to update to Blu-ray and still buys DVDs like they're going out of style. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know. I mean, hey, I still got some VHS too. We're
cheaper. I get it.
Now, I do want to pose this question before we get to the break, because we're right at the break now, that I get with the speed of the internet nowadays and all the streaming services and the access that we have available, why the rental store has gone by the wayside. And like I said, if you want to get more into that, I think VHS Massacre is available on Amazon Prime, which is so ironic, a documentary about the death of physical media. But I do feel like there is something that's lost from not having the physical store to go to like dig through. Like with movies streaming, you're just looking at what they have available and then like watching the trailers and stuff. But there's something about just literally having the title and being able to see who's in it, who directed it, and maybe one paragraph blurb, and being able to just like dive in. And now you're so fully informed about the product before you engage on it. I spend 2 hours watching trailers before I pick a movie that I want to watch. Whereas when I was a kid, I would read a blurb and be like, good enough, and just pick a fucking movie. Like
2 hours is too long.
Well, I'm exaggerating only by an hour maybe. But
hold on.
That's like searching for a parking spot for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But no. What I'll say is that right now, obviously the video store is basically extinct. However, the fact that record stores almost went extinct and then kind of had a resurgence
with vinyl. Yeah. With
vinyl. I think there's a possibility that, you know, certain kind of collectible styles of physical film media might have a resurgence, just like bookstores.
I think this is just what you repeat to yourself when you're touching yourself at night before you go to sleep. It's like, it's okay, DVDs. There will be a place for you in the future.
There will never be chain bookstores or chain like video rental stores again. But what I'm saying is that, you know, like as a collection, like
what he's saying is don't reinvest in Blockbuster.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. The inspiration.
You can go to a place locally like Plan 9 where you can get your vinyl, you can get used movies, and sometimes they have some fucking awesome shit. And there are even big box stores like Second and Charles, which I'm still curious how they have survived. But
really cheap stuff.
Yeah, I do love really some Second and Charles. Stuff.
Seriously.
That's a good deal.
Like,
but I will say
there's a movie
that Blockbuster still does technically exist. There is one Blockbuster left, which is such a weird choice to make as a company. Like, we're going to destroy the entire thing except one. Like, there's one store left. There's even a documentary called The Last Blockbuster. But
yeah, that means it's privately owned, and it's out in Oregon.
Let's see who owns that Blockbuster if it's part of a publicly traded company. And the inspiration for this episode was because of everything going on with GameStop, which is a dying medium as well.
GameStop. You're
GameStop,
right.
GameStop, yeah. Yeah.
That's accurate.
That video games are now, for the most part, downloaded, that people aren't buying the physical copies anymore. That is going by the wayside, much like Blockbuster did, which is what the inspiration for this episode was. And I'm curious if there is some public traded stock that is involved with the last Blockbuster, if that's maybe the next step, is that you go from GameStop to the Blockbuster stock and just like build that up. And then suddenly Blockbusters start popping up randomly with just like weebs and Reddit and 4chan dudes that own it that are just like, fuck it. I don't even give a shit if it makes money. You want to move it for free? Do, fuck it.
That's some dumb.
No matter what you do with it or do it with, it's illegal. Everything that happened with GameStop fighting the hedge funders, or they were trying to do that shit, was illegal as fuck.
No, it was actually very legal.
The hedge fund guys?
No. The hedge fund guys have been doing that for years, and it seems illegal, but it's not. And so when the little man started playing by their rules and doing it legally is when everything shut the fuck down, because it's meant for the hedge fund guys, not for the little man.
Mm.
Also, on the Blockbuster stock, my wife decided to jump in on the fuck the hedge funds thing and bought some stocks, and like, you know, she's playing around with it and fucking around with it, whatever, it's a gamble, but she definitely looked to see if she could buy me some Blockbuster stocks, and it's just not there.
Oh no,
it hasn't been there in years.
It's
bro
non-existent. It's just gone.
I'm just gonna let you know right now.
It's like the former CEO that like refuses to give up the fucking ghost on it, and it's not even publicly traded anymore, and now he's just like the owner of one store, and I think, what is it, Oregon?
No. That is a privately owned franchise store. And if anybody has Blockbuster stock, that is just basically paper that you can wipe your ass with.
I'm mad that I didn't hold on to my Blockbuster stuff, because once I quit, I was like, fuck this store, and got rid of my shirts.
On fire.
I got rid of everything. But now you can sell Blockbuster polos on eBay for like $40 a pop. People are like buying that shit up because it's nostalgic. And I missed the fucking boat on that.
That's the power of nostalgia, man.
No shit. But let's take a break. Let's listen to some of the other shows that you can hear on the network, on the Geeks Under the Influence Network. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what we're drinking, maybe do a drunken scene or two, and then get into maybe some more stories from the counter side of working at a Blockbuster, as well as some more stories from rental stories as well. So stick around, we'll be back in just a second.
Join us or die! Join us or die! Or I will swallow your soul!
GUIPodcast.com.
Hey geeks, that's it for this episode. Remember, next week we are going to be releasing part 2, which was the second half of the episode. Again, we ran about 2 hours total or whereabouts for this episode, so we just split it in two. So thank you so much for listening to the first part. Hopefully you enjoy the second part next week as well. And remember to rate, review, subscribe, all the stuff you do with podcasts. And why don't you go ahead and share this with people you knew that worked at a Blockbuster back in the day, or that you've talked at length about going to the rental stores when you were younger. Word of mouth is the best way to get us heard by new audiences. So we do appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.